Seth Fropman, the country's top watchdog for student borrowers, resigned earlier this week. Until Monday, he was the head of an office that regulated the student loan industry at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. That industry is worth an estimated $1.5 trillion. And in a blistering resignation letter, Fropman charged the agency with failing in its duty to regulate lenders. Laura Meckler is a national education reporter with The Washington Post. Laura, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Before we get into the reasons for this resignation, tell us a little bit about who Seth Fropman is and what his role at the CFPB was.
Well, he was, as you said, the ombudsman. So it was his job to essentially oversee the student loan market, which is a huge market. You know, these are all basically anybody who is looking to borrow money to go to college is borrowing money from the federal government. So then, and there is a big, but there's a big industry of people, servicers and others who service these loans and are involved with it. And not to mention many different colleges, some of which are for-profit, as well as obviously the many nonprofit colleges. And there's a lot of work by the federal government to sort of oversee this industry and make sure that both students and taxpayers are being treated right. So his job was to essentially oversee the market, and he had arrived at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau during the Obama administration. He was elevated to this post in 2016, or I believe in 2015 as an acting, and then in 2016. And then, of course, things changed at the CFPB after the Trump administration arrived, and they took a very different point of view as to what their job should be.
So with his taking over this office in 2016 up to this week, were they charged with doing specific investigations, issuing reports? What
sure,
kind of
exactly.
Day-to-day work did they do?
Yes, that's what it was. They would take complaints from individual consumers. They would do investigations where they saw widespread abuses. They would issue reports about what was happening in the industry. So it was all of that sort of work.
And did they have any ability to either punish or actually intervene with lenders if they were not behaving the way that they were expected to be?
Well, they could bring lawsuits on behalf of the agency and support other suits, and they could bring information to light. So they did have there are powers that are inherent within this agency for sure.
And before the change of administration, what kind of reviews was Fropman and his staff getting?
Well, I guess it depends on who you ask, right? people who wanted an aggressive investigation of the industry, I think, were pretty pleased with the work that he was doing. But, others, including Mick Mulvaney, who is the President Trump's budget chief and is also the acting director of the agency, he thought that this, and many Republicans thought that the CFPB was, way too aggressive and had, way too much power. They didn't like the way the agency was set up in the first place. I think that Mulvaney once called the CFPB a sad, sick sad joke, but was, it is created under law, so they could not actually get rid of it. But, he came along and proposed killing and revising all sorts of Obama-era regulations and scaled back enforcement way significantly. So clearly the critics feel like it was too aggressive. So it really depends on where you sit. And I think that, Seth Fropman is not the only person who would be under that kind of praise/criticism, but his work would be among that.
Well, let's look specifically at some of the things that Seth Fropman called out in his resignation letter. One thing is he said the agency has, quote, undercut enforcement of the law. What was he referring to when he said that?
I have to find that exact spot in the letter. The phrases like that are sort of strewn throughout this incredibly biting two-plus page letter. But he is talking in general about less enforcement, not taking on the same number of cases as they used to. But he also is talking in his letter about some very specific points. I'm just not sure if that particular phrase applies to it, but we could talk about some of the specific criticisms that he had, because he did offer some specifics into his law. Oh, here it is, undercutting enforcement of the law. So what he's referring to there has to do with whether the agency was going to, in fact, come down on continue to press a lawsuit against Navient, which is one of the country's largest student loan servicing companies. It's been accused of widespread abuses in the collection of student debt payments. And a lot of people are fearful that the Bureau is going to drop its lawsuit against Navient. So that is, I think that's what he was referring to at that spot.
How much independence did Seth Frotman and his team have under the leadership of Nick Mulvaney? Because one of the things that he also says in his letter is that Mulvaney has undermined the Bureau's independence.
Yeah, I think not anywhere near as much as he would have liked. I think that that's clear that he did not have the kind of independence that he thought that he should have had. For instance, the Education Department separately, which is a separate part of the government, has been rolling back Obama-era rules that crack down on particularly for-profit colleges. And he wanted to, evidently, according to his letter, he wanted to speak up about that. He says in his letter that senior leadership at the Bureau, at the CFPB, had blocked efforts to call attention to essentially actions of the administration elsewhere that they felt would, you know, hurt families and essentially serve as a watchdog on the rest of the government. So basically you had the Education Department doing something that Seth Frotman thought was harmful, and they wouldn't let him speak out about it.
We're talking with Laura Meckler, who's an education reporter with the Washington Post, and we're talking about the resignation earlier this week of Seth Frotman. He was the country's top watchdog for student borrowers. And Laura, in his last point, he charged the agency with, quote, shielding bad actors from scrutiny. That's a fairly weighty accusation. What does he point to in making that statement?
Well, the letter is a little bit vague about what he's referring to, but from talking to some people, I found out what that was a reference to, which is the law requires the Bureau to put a report out every year about credit card use of the credit card industry targeted at students, and they put that out. But a year or two ago, under the Obama administration, the agency expanded that because they said, you know, because there was so much light on the credit card industry, a lot of the manipulative practices had been migrating to the debit card industry. So in the last year of the Obama administration, and possibly the year before, they put out a report that said, okay, we're looking at the credit card industry and the debit card industry to see what are they doing. Are they acting in, you know, predatory ways, you know, dubious account fees, that sort of thing. And under Mulvaney, according to Seth Frotman, what happened was they said, no, you know, the law only requires that we report on credit cards, not on debit cards. So even though you found this information about debit cards, we're not going to put that in the report. What had been a 40-page report the year before was now became a 20-page report. And in fact, in a letter to when a member of Congress questioned this, Jack Reed from Rhode Island, I believe it was, Mick Mulvaney wrote back and said, you know, the law requires a report on credit cards, you know, period. And that's what they produced. So that was, according to Seth's letter, an example of sort of suppressing information and shielding bad actors from scrutiny when you just won't put this information out.
We have heard that there are a lot of vacancies in the federal government, a lot of posts going unfilled, and agencies being shrunk. Do we know how the CFPB as a whole, and specifically this department that Seth Frotman was in charge of, if they are staffed as well as they used to be or should be on paper?
Well, I don't really have those numbers, so I don't know exactly what. I think it's a fair guess that they are not. There have been a lot of people who have left the CFPB. I'm sure, you know, not all in quite this dramatic fashion, but like on the same day that he left, his deputy left as well, I think for similar reasons. So, and many others have left the agency too, because, I mean, kind of logical. You know, someone comes to an agency like that probably because they, you know, really support the mission of the agency, which they view, certainly the people who came in the Obama administration, as sort of aggressive oversight of the financial services industry and other parts of the economy. And when you're held back and not able to do what you got there for, you know, I'm guessing those jobs are not real satisfying. So a lot of people have left. I don't know where they are in the replacement process.
We're talking with Laura Meckler. She's education reporter for The Washington Post, and we're discussing the resignation of the federal student borrower watchdog at the CFPB. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Are you someone with student debt yourself? What has your experience been like trying to navigate the paperwork and fine print that comes with student loans? And have you seen or experienced shady lending practices by that industry? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation here on Central Time after this short break. We're continuing our conversation with Laura Meckler, national education reporter for The Washington Post. We're talking about the resignation of the country's top watchdog for student borrowers, which happened this week. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Is this an industry that you think needs aggressive oversight? What was signing up for a student loan like for you? And what's your experience been trying to pay your loan back? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or send us an email at ideas@wpr.org. And Laura, let's take a step back for a moment. In general, what has the Trump administration's broader stance been when it comes to regulating and overseeing financial industry in general?
Well, I think in general, if we can even take a step even further back of just what has the stance been on regulating, which is less of. So there's been less regulation in almost every part of the administration. Obviously, we've seen that on the environment. I think we've seen that in the financial sector. We've certainly seen it in education and in terms of the regulation of the federal student loan program and regulations that affected the for-profit college industry. So we've seen it all over the place.
And you just mentioned the for-profit college industry. Let's look at some other changes, this time from the Education Department. A story you reported on last month talks about changes to the rules overseeing when students can say that they were defrauded by colleges and what options there are for them. What change happened there?
Yeah, so what that has to do with is when students borrow money from the federal government to go to college, and if it turns out that the college education that they got was just where they were essentially defrauded, they were lied to, they have a ability to go to the government and say, you know what, I don't need to pay back my student loans because I didn't get a real education. So the question is, what are the rules that are going to be around surrounding that? So what the Trump administration did, and Betsy DeVos at the Education Department did, was put on hold the Obama administration's rule, or is actually proposing to replace the Obama administration's rule with a new version. And under the new version, it's much just harder to prove your claim. It's a higher burden of proof. For instance, you have to show that the college knowingly defrauded you, not that they just wound up defrauding you, but that they knew what they were doing. Now, that's kind of a hard thing to prove sometimes, especially if you're just a random person, not somebody, you know, who's in a lawsuit with subpoena power and that sort of thing. So that's an example of how they're making it tougher. Of course, then the if you do win your case and you don't pay back your loan, the Education Department, then it goes to the college and tries to get the money from them. So the colleges are the winners if fewer people are able to make these claims.
You also reported on changes under Betsy DeVos that would get rid of caps to the amount of debt students could rack up in career training programs. Give us some details on that.
Well, so what that has to do with is, you know, you have some of these schools, that these usually for-profit career training type schools, where you go there and you might end up borrowing a huge amount of money. And the question is, did you actually are you able to get a job that's going to pay you enough to pay back your debt? And so that's called what this called in technical terms a gainful employment rule. Are you able to the colleges essentially have to show that people graduating from their schools are making enough money to pay their loans back? You know, because again, these are taxpayer-backed loans. Well, Betsy DeVos is getting rid of that gainful employment rule and instead wants to put up what just these more data for people, like scorecards, so people can, before they make a decision about borrowing money, they can sort of, the idea is to have more information about the track record of those colleges and how the graduates from those schools have done, which obviously is a lot weaker in terms of sort of a federal oversight role than actually requiring that this ratio of how much money you make to how much money you borrow is a reasonable one.
Why was that gainful employment rule put in place in the first place?
Well, because you had people who were graduating from colleges with huge amounts of debt and then getting, you know, not being able to get jobs or getting, you know, really pretty low-paying jobs. So, you know, the difference is, like, you know, there are obviously lots of people who don't graduate from school and get well-paying jobs. You know, for instance, community colleges. A lot of people go to a community college and they don't get a great job at the end of the day. But a community college is pretty inexpensive, sometimes straight up free. So that would be the difference. If you're paying a lot of money for a college you saw advertised on TV and said, okay, this is my solution, they, you know, I'm going to end up, you know, with some great career at the end of this, and then that doesn't happen, and it doesn't happen in general, not just to you, but their overall, their track record is not good, then that's what they're going for, going at.
And Laura, when you talked with officials about all these different changes, all of which seem to have in common that they are kind of putting their finger on the scale in favor of the industry instead of the student borrowers, what rationale do they give for these changes?
Well, I think that the rationale, there's different rationales depending on what where you're coming from. I think a lot of these, the rationale is that, you know, this isn't the federal government's role to be essentially so aggressively overseeing this, that, you know, people need to take some personal responsibility, that we're going to put information out there and people can make the decision that's right for them. They also don't want to stifle the industry. They say that, you know, they want to encourage innovation and that, you know, let's be honest, the student, our options for colleges are not great. You know, people go into, you know, serious debt for these, some of these schools. They're saying, well, we want to encourage new options to come along, innovative options, they would say. And, you know, if you have all these regulations, it's going to be harder for these new competitors, new options to flourish. I think that would be one of the arguments.
We started out talking about the resignation of Seth Frotman, the head of the Student Loan Watchdog Office at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, and his scathing resignation letter. How has the head of the CFPB, Nick Mulvaney, responded, if at all, to that resignation letter?
He has not responded, at least not that I'm familiar with. The agency, in fact, they actually, the quote was, "We wish all our former employees, you know, all the best." That's what the spokesperson said. So he was not going to get into it and go tit for tat. I mean, you know, it probably was the right call from a public relations point of view. Because, I mean, what do you say when, I mean, let's just read a quote from the letter so people know what we're talking about when you say scathing. You know, he wrote, "Unfortunately, speaking to Mick Mulvaney, under your leadership, the Bureau has abandoned the very consumers it was tasked by Congress with protecting. Instead, you have used the Bureau to serve the wishes of the most powerful financial companies in America." So what's he gonna say? Mm. No, I didn't. I mean, so.
Is there any speculation about who might take over that top post now that Seth Frotman has resigned?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure who is in the mix for that job.
So as we said,
not his deputy, because the deputy also resigned.
Right.
So
as we said, this is a $1.5 trillion industry. What might it mean for oversight of student loan companies and banks and for the students who are borrowing the money if this position is filled with someone who is less aggressive than Seth Frotman, which I think is a pretty fair guess that it will?
Right. Well, I think we'll see fewer investigations. We might, as Seth predicted, see the Bureau drop its lawsuit against Navient. You're just going to see, you know, a holding back. I mean, I think that's where we should, you know, you got to keep in mind what we talked about earlier, which is the overall Republican view of this agency, which is that wasn't really necessary in the first place, and it shouldn't be so aggressive. This was, of course, Elizabeth Warren's baby. She wanted this thing created. She was actually originally slated to be its first director, but was, the Obama and White House determined she was not confirmable into this job because she was so controversial. This was before she was in the Senate. It was formed in the wake of the financial crisis. and the Great Recession. And the idea behind it was to, you know, have another check on the economy. Well, you know, times have, we have moved away from that, and maybe memories have faded a bit of what happened. And certainly the mainstream Republican view is also that, you know, that there aren't enough checks on this agency. It has far too much independence, and it should, you know, be subject to the same sort of changes and policy preferences that all of the rest of the federal government is, which is when a president is elected, he or perhaps she gets to decide what the orientation of the regulatory state is. And I think we've seen throughout the government that it's less regulation.
Well, Laura, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
That was Laura Meckler, national education reporter for The Washington Post. She was with us to talk about the resignation of Seth Frotman, the head of the Student Loan Watchdog Office at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Coming up Monday on Central Time, we'll find out about changes that the U.S. Department of Education is making to how campuses handle sexual assault accusations, and we'll ask what you think about the changes. You've probably seen ads attacking Democratic candidate for Governor Tony Evers for a Middleton teacher keeping his license after viewing pornography at work, and ads in which Evers defends himself. We'll dig through what's true and not. And it's a big year for Camp Manitowish. They're celebrating 100 years of campers and adventure. We'll learn about that history. All that and more coming up Monday right here on Central Time.